Support for WPR comes from UW-Superior Center for Continuing Education, offering Conversations on Living Alone, a three-part series beginning Wednesday, April 17th via Zoom. Details at uwsuper.edu. Support for WPR comes from Focus on Energy, committed to helping Wisconsinites focus on the planet by making smart energy choices. Energy resources for Earth Day and every day can be found at focusonenergy.com.
It's the morning show. I'm Carrie Kaufman. We're digging into statistics of poverty this morning, but more importantly, we're trying to get a sense of what poverty looks like in Wisconsin and how much people need to get by in this state. Your calls and emails and tweets are important this hour. Are you considered to be below the poverty rate? Are you technically above it but still fall short each month? What are the barriers you face in changing your situation? How much does race play in your poverty rate? Timothy Smeeting is an economist at UW La Follette School of Public Affairs. Smeeting authored the study out Friday called Wisconsin Poverty Report, Moving in the Wrong Direction, Rising Poverty Rates in 2016. Our number for you to call is 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas at WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Timothy, welcome to the program.
Hi, Carrie. Thank you for having me.
We are going in the wrong direction. What was the poverty rate before, and when did you last measure it, and what are we talking about now?
This is the 10th annual report, and what we like to do is to look at three main poverty measures. We like to look at how the market affects people, since we're in a strong recovery and jobs are growing, even if wages aren't rising at all, particularly at the bottom, not too much anyway, during this period. You'd like to know if the market is pushing down poverty. That's what we'd like. We'd like people to get a job that makes them better off and allows them to support their families, and they wouldn't need any government programs. That's the goal. But work alone generally doesn't do it for low-skilled people, particularly single parents and others formerly incarcerated. Then we have the official poverty rate, which has been around since the 1950s, and we have to pay some attention to that and see how that tracks things. And then there's the Wisconsin poverty measure, which does a lot of different things that I can talk about if you'd like.
Yes.
But the surprise this year, I mean, last year everything went in the right direction. Everything went down. Last year we did it for 2015. The most recent data we have is 2016, so we're talking a year and a half ago. But,
right.
But this year, wait a minute, market income poverty didn't go down. It more or less stayed flat. It didn't go up significantly, but it was flat. And then the programs and policies that help people, the Earned Income Credit and the Food Share Program and things like that, those didn't have as much kick this year either. So we had a significant increase in poverty, according to the Wisconsin poverty measure, and also with the official one.
Federal policy.
According to the ACS, which is the one that gives you the most detail on Wisconsin. We know that there's some issues with reporting and whatever, but the methodology didn't really change. We kept the same methods and things, so I was very surprised to see things not continuing to go down.
From 2015 to 2016, we don't know, and we won't know till next year what the rate was in 2017 and beyond.
Yes.
When things kind of feel a little better, perhaps, right now.
Well, they feel better in Madison.
Right. So let's talk about where people are poor. They feel better in Madison. How are they in Milwaukee? How are they in the Milwaukee suburbs? How are they in rural areas?
Well, this year, the reason we do this and we use the American Community Survey is it allows us to get into 28 different census regions within each of the least 100,000 people within Wisconsin. So you can dig down within Wisconsin. Sometimes, like in Milwaukee, you have six different districts within the county. In Dane, we have three within the county. But other times you have up in the Superior region, you take 10 counties and put them together to get 100,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
But this year, the good news is for the first time, 26 different counties were all significantly below the average rate, which was 10.8%, the average rate in the state. We never had so many doing so well. They're, in the middle in the western parts of the state. They're up towards Green Bay, and they're all along the, you know, along the Michigan shore, north of Milwaukee. Then we have Milwaukee. Milwaukee is the only place that's significantly poorer than the rest of the state. The poverty rate in Milwaukee, even after we've counted all of these programs that we know we spend a lot of money on, is 17.5%. The statewide is 10.8. That's just, you know, huge difference. And then, of course, the counties around, especially to the west and to the north, Jefferson, Ozaukee, and Washington, those are pretty rich counties. They have poverty rates in single digits. They're significantly below the 10.8. They're somewhere below 8 or 9 or below. But in Milwaukee, we have 17.5. And even within the county of Milwaukee, the poverty rates vary from something like 38% in the central part to something like 4 or 5% in Cedarburg and Whitefish Bay and so forth, within the same county. And we haven't dug deeply into this just yet, but we are going to take a close look.
You are have been doing this for a long time. What is your educated guess here?
A lot of it has to do with race, for sure. If you overlay a heat map, which shows where a lot of minorities are, particularly race, maybe ethnicity too. We have 6% of our state population is black, and 6% of our state population is Latino or other immigrant, foreign-born. And we have enough there to dig into it. So this summer, we're going to try and dig into minority poverty in the state as a whole, and particularly in Milwaukee County, where 3/4 of the African-American population in Wisconsin lives, for instance.
We are talking about poverty in Wisconsin. A new poverty report was put out by our guest, Tim Smeeding. We are taking your calls, 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@WPR.org. Eugene from Viola, welcome.
Good morning. The problem you've got, I'm in the western part of the state, is you've got long distances and few grocery stores. And those grocery stores that are there are small, and it costs money to ship them in, and the prices are a lot of times higher. Also, you haven't got the wages that are keeping up with anything, particularly in the western part of the state. I live in a small village here, about 700, and there isn't any grocery store here. There's one in Lafarge, north of a small one. To get any groceries, you've got to go to Brooklyn. That's 13 miles, pretty much. So that's the problem you're up against. We're a rural state. And to ship those groceries and everything into those small towns does cost money.
Does that have an effect on the poverty rate?
Gene, I'm with you. But one of the things we do is we don't adjust for how long you have to go to shop, but we do adjust for how long it is to drive to work and back. And so one of the significant things that we found this year, because more people are working, even as just as you said, wages aren't rising, even though more people are working, it costs money to go to work. You particularly parents need child care. That's expensive. And you have to drive. And when we first, 10 years ago, when I first began the Wisconsin Poverty Report, we talked to people what was important. And they said, hey, I can't afford to live here or there. I live in this small town, and I drive 45 minutes or 40 minutes every day back and forth to work. And that's gas in the tank, and that's wear and tear in the car. You better take account of it. And we do. The Wisconsin Poverty Measure takes account of that.
And the federal poverty measure does not take account of that. We'll talk about that in a minute. Emily from Sheboygan, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Welcome. Thank you.
So what is your question or comment?
Mike, I'm a single mom with two small children, and I find it very frustrating, just the general attitude that I find our country in right now when it comes to people of lower income classes. I feel like there's a big stigma that perhaps we choose to be in the situation that we're in. I hear a lot of times, you know, get an education and you'll get better wages, but that's not really the case. And there are so many factors that play into your financial situation. And when things happen, there's really no way to get out of the hole that you seem to end up in. And I was hearing your comments about driving. I live in Plymouth, and I live there because my parents live 10 minutes away, and they will watch my children, bless their hearts, for free. And that pretty much, I drive to Appleton, I drive to Green Bay, and I drive to Grafton for work. So that's a long distance to drive, but it's easier to pay $20 for gas than it is to pay $500, $600, $700 a month for childcare.
Thank you very much, Emily. Let's talk about the stigma that that you face when you are living in poverty or when you don't have quite enough to make ends meet.
It's kind of unfortunately a lot of people think, well, it's your fault. So why did you have those kids? Okay. Why?
Tend to ask this question. Let's be honest. We tend to ask this question of people of color much more than
much
we do
more,
to white,
much more.
White people.
But still, I mean, it's hard, and single parents try and make a go of it. So here's Emily. She's got to drive. Luckily, she's got her parents that gives her a break. Otherwise, the carers haven't given her any slots yet. Now, if your youngest child was of school age, in a couple of months, what the state is going to tell you is that you have to work 30 hours a week or apply for work fair for 30 hours a week. You're going to say, well, great. Do I get any before and after school care? Well, I don't know. We can't afford that. Or, I need to put gas in the car, and if you make $7.25 an hour or $8 an hour, that's expensive to do all this commuting. How come the minimum wage isn't a little bit higher? I'm not talking $15. Forget it. Don't put me in that camp. I'm talking $10 an hour.
Right.
I'm talking the other 30 states in the country which have a minimum wage that's something above the 7.25, and so forth. So I'm Emily, it's hard for you, I know, but keep punching and keep trying. And it sounds to me like you're working hard on it. And I wish I could give you some more help and a little bit better wages and a chance to, you know, work your way out of this hole. But God bless your parents for helping you out and for you for trying.
We're going to take a break right now and come back and talk about this hole and how some people are in it. And as Emily said, can't seem to get out. We're talking about the poverty rate in Wisconsin. Can your family of four make it on $25,000 a year? Are you able to have insurance? Do you go without things? 1-800-642-1234. We'll take your calls in a moment. It's the morning show. I'm Carrie Kaufman. We're dancing here today. We're talking about the poverty rate in Wisconsin in the wake of a new report that shows there are more people who fall into the poverty measurements than in previous studies. But can people above the poverty line really make it in this state? We are taking your calls, 800-642-1234. ideas@WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Now, Tim's meeting, I wanted to follow up on what our last caller said about it's really hard to dig out of that hole. You know, she's got a job that she drives to all over the place. She's got these extra expenses for her kids. Once you fall into this, in kind of below the line, and I don't know that the line is really what the federal poverty rate says it is. Once you fall below the line, how hard is it to dig out?
Well, it depends, obviously, on your situation. If you have a job where pay is rising, where you know you're doing a better job and you have steady work, steady is important, and with rising pay, you've got some chance, you've got some hope.
Do we have pay rising? If you have a job, do you get a raise in the way that you used to get a raise before the recession?
We know that's not happening very well. The only people in the country where consistently you're seeing pay increasing are people who have a degree beyond a bachelor's degree. I mean, that's the dividing line. Even people with bachelor's degrees, they're getting jobs and they're fighting it. Now, if you live in big cities or you have a job with some chance of advancement, you do okay. In a very tight labor market where you need to keep workers, employers are being forced by the market to raise pay.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's good. But, you know, they find a lot of ways not to raise pay. We have non-compete clauses for people working fast food, which means that, you know,
they can't go from Burger King to McDonald's.
Right, exactly. You might take a trade, a hamburger secret with you or something like that. And if you restrict competition this way, you hold wages down. And that makes it all the harder. Now, single parents do get some help from the federal government with refundable child tax credits and with your earned income credit. Those are really good. Those help boost income. You get a big check sometime in May or February and March most of the time. But still, it's not enough. And as you said before, we're talking about roughly $25,000. Maybe for somebody like Emily, who was on just a minute ago with two kids, it's $20,000, $21,000. That's not a lot of money.
Right.
But still, think about it. You know, how to get out of that. If you work at $8 an hour, 50 weeks a year, mm-hmm. 40 hours a week, that's a simple rule of 2,000. You made $16,000 a year.
Right.
Oh, you have to pay work-related costs. Oh, you might have to pay some healthcare costs out of pocket that you can't avoid. You got childcare costs, which luckily Emily got around, but other people aren't so lucky. It just makes it hard. Now, if you're making $15 an hour, all right. If I'm making $15 an hour, then that's $30,000 a year, and I'm digging my way out. But not very many people.
Can people really dig out at $30,000 a year?
I think out of the official poverty line, yes. Out of something that other people think is to a decent standard of living, no. But you have to remember that the median income for families with children in this country is about $60,000. And 48% of the kids in this country live below 200 times the poverty line.
That's a wow. Rich from Rhinelander, welcome to the program.
I'm struck by your... good morning.
Good morning.
I'm struck by your guest's comments about the Milwaukee area. And my question is, if he could address the inheritability of poverty, because when my sister and I were young adults in the 60s, we came from a very moderate income family, but education was extremely cheap at that time. It really was. It was very inexpensive. I remember protesting a $25 rise in the cost of tuition at the University of Wisconsin in the second semester when I was at UW-Madison. And I just think studying how a lot of black people were locked out of the benefits of the GI Bill, not because of the bill, but because of banking and mortgage policies and stuff like that. Education is so expensive today. I don't know a family that doesn't want its kids to get educated mm-hmm. and do better, but poverty is inherited.
So Rich's point is a good one, that you your life is built off of the life that your parents gave you, the equity they had in their house, the college education they had, that they've given to you in some way, shape, or form, kind of as a start. And if you were redlined, if you were not allowed to go to school, or if you were not allowed to actually have equity in your house, that puts you at a disadvantage. How much of that is still what's driving poverty in black areas in Milwaukee?
Well, you know, Rich, first of all, I hear you. My father was a union carpenter in Buffalo, New York. I was the oldest of six. He didn't finish high school. He had to quit just before World War II to help support the family. But he always believed in education, and he pushed me hard, and he helped me get there. And that's been very important for me. I had the Jesuits pounded into me, and they did a great job, I think. So that's the key. But, you know, if you look inside Milwaukee, for instance, there's no secret. The schools really don't work very well.
Right.
Very few graduate. There aren't a lot of good role models. A point that Kerry was making, there's not a lot of wealth there. There's not a lot of savings. And there's not a lot of opportunities. About half of the African-American men in Milwaukee have had some serious run-in with the criminal justice system, and they have a terrible time finding a job afterwards. So
and what is this? I mean, are most of these criminal justice issues nonviolent issues?
Depends.
Is this a result of kind of a targeting of this community?
It's, Kerry, you're making a great point. Some is violent, and violent criminals should be locked up
right.
to protect society. But a lot of it is just that we police areas where we think the crime is, and you're much more likely to get caught walking, you know, driving without a seatbelt, or crossing the street the wrong way, or standing on a corner drinking a beer, which I did in South Buffalo when I was a kid, too. And, you know, have a run-in with the law and be on their list. And pretty soon, you know, school isn't working for you. And what works in the neighborhood is, you know, maybe some petty theft or something. And you get into that cycle, and then you're there. Mm-hmm. And then you get sentenced to something like our youth prison, which we're closing, not sentenced to go back to school or deferred to something else. And then you're in the system. And once you're in the system, it is very hard to get out. And Wisconsin's incarceration rates of African Americans are second in the country, I believe. And our incarceration rate hasn't gone down. We had, and this isn't a left or right issue. We all agree with this. We all think that this is the thing to do. The right doesn't like paying $32,000 a year to warehouse somebody. I don't either. And the left wants to give families a chance and give African American men a chance to work and get ahead. And so that makes it hard. Now, the trick is, I think, getting to college. If you can get here to the University of Wisconsin-Madison now, there's a Badger promise that Becky Blank just put in that if your income's below the median in the state, you go for free.
Right.
Are you going to get into the dorm for free? No. Are you going to eat for free? No. But they'll find a way to help you get over that, give you something of a scholarship, work study or something. So the cost...
Right. You can get an education if your public education leads you to this school.
Our public education is in general in Wisconsin is among the lowest in the country.
We are talking about poverty this morning. Please give us a call. 800-642-1234. Ray from Milwaukee joins us. Welcome to the program, Ray.
Good morning. I'm glad you brought me in just now. We have a $1 billion project to build a streetcar a mile and a half from downtown Milwaukee into the yuppie white east side. A mayor, who's presumably a progressive, and also all the aldermen that were in the city are also presumably progressive, did not be in that project that there should be more people of color working the construction of this worthless streetcar. Now, that is a good place to start. We need to look at ourselves, people that call ourselves progressive and liberal. The people we have voted for to represent us for the last years have been selling us down the river, and Milwaukee and the billion-dollar streetcar is the perfect example of this, and we should be outraged. There should be more women on those construction sites. There should be more people of color. You're lucky to see one black man digging with the other 20 white guys that probably live in the suburbs here that are getting majority of this month for building this wasteful project, which is totally unneeded.
Okay, so billion-dollar streetcar now goes in my vocabulary with a bridge to nowhere, just kind of the way that Ray said this. But this is directing state money to specific groups that may need more help, who are discriminated against in employment. We don't do that here.
Absolutely. Now, Ray... I can't believe it, Ray. You must have read. I've written this exact same thing for the American Enterprise Institute, which isn't exactly a left-wing organization, that, in fact, if you want a contract from the state or the federal government to do an infrastructure project like the streetcar to nowhere, you need to hire 10, 15, 20% of your workforce needs to be people who need a chance. Will help you make sure that they get there in a day, and that's what you need to do, because 90% of those jobs do not need a college education, mm-hmm. Okay? And it's not happening. It's really sad. I've been approached by lots of people in Milwaukee who said, well, so-and-so's come out of prison. We've worked with them. They have a certificate to do this, that, and the other thing, and no one will hire this person. And it has a lot to do with people of color. Now, this is interesting. A $1 billion streetcar to nowhere. This is after we turned down $900 million from the federal government to build to help build the rail line from the high speed rail, which ended up going through Rockford because we weren't willing to have it come through here or between Madison and Milwaukee, which would be wonderful. So I didn't plant you, Ray. I'm sorry, but I couldn't agree with you more than 120%. You're right on it.
We are taking your calls, 800-642-1234, on poverty today. Larry from Sturgeon Bay, welcome to the program, Larry.
Thank you for having me. I hear you talk a lot about the Hispanic and the black communities, and I was wondering if anybody's monitoring the Indian reservations. We have 13 different bands here in Wisconsin, and I know on the nationwide situation, there are some very terrible poverty places. And I'm just wondering if we're included in on this survey. I'll take the answer off to you. Thank you.
Yes.
Hey, Larry. Yeah, you're in. But there aren't. You're not big enough by yourselves to be studied by this every year. After 4 or 5 years, you can. The thing that seems to happen with the Native American population is those who have a casino business, the Ho-Chunks and so forth, are able to afford a lot more things. And there's been good research by my colleague Barbara Wolf and others that, in fact, this makes a difference.
Right.
You know, you're able to afford education, you're able to afford transportation and so forth, and you end up with better jobs. We haven't honed in them in this report because, again, because they're a relatively small population. Over a longer period, you can look at it. We've had some good graduates at the LaFalle School who've gone back to work in your area and helped Native American people. And you're not forgotten, and we know you're there, and we hope you get the same sort of help that we're talking about for other people, too.
We are talking about poverty this morning, 800-642-1234. Tony from Egg Harbor, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you, Carrie. I want to start by saying I think you better get really comfortable because you are just rocking the morning show.
Thank you.
And I can't tell you how much I enjoy listening to you.
He's good.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you very much. But anyway, your comment on poverty.
The weird thing about Door County is that we're on both ends of the scale. We're the richest and the poorest simultaneously in the state. If you take out the seniors on fixed incomes, we're one of the poorest because Door County's got a 12-week industry in tourism. And the people that are working in tourism are typically working 3 and 4 jobs. The term is called gigging, and they're working anywhere they can to pick up some extra money. And there's kind of this silent majority of people that are just making ends meet amongst people that, you know, I'm driving over the Michigan Avenue Bridge, and I'm looking at million-dollar yachts at the same time. And it's just, it's a strange pairing.
Yeah, it is a tourist town. This is the issue with tourist towns.
I was called about this a couple of times by people in Door County. You know, we need, in the summer, we've got lots of jobs. We can't find the people. And in the winter, of course, you don't have it. So the local community college was smart enough to put in a program which hired a lot of young people as apprentices in the larger establishments in Door County and kind of got them into the industry. So, yeah, it's good in the summer, and I'm going to be there Labor Day near Egg Harbor, too, Tony. Maybe I'll see you for a weekend. But the thing you kind of got going for you now, if you can get transportation to Green Bay, Brown County, I believe that's the county. I've only been here 10 years, so I'm not real good. Yep, Brown County is hot to trot. Their poverty rate is 10%. Roughly the state average, but it's been falling for a while. They got jobs. They're banging away. So that would be helpful if you could get some transportation.
Yeah, but it's a little bit of a drive.
Sure,
that's
a drive.
That's the issue.
This is always the issue. At least you seem to have some decent internet up there. Rural internet backbone allows people to work remotely sometimes. Mm-hmm. It's difficult, and this happens all over in the tourist industry. But as old people like me, I'm 70. As older people keep coming along and they've saved some and they've done okay, we're going to come to Door County to enjoy the beautiful things up there. I just wish you could change the weather. If global warming came along, maybe you get 16 weeks or 18 weeks. But it's just tough up there, and I know in the winter, I don't have an easy solution for you.
We are talking about poverty in Wisconsin. Our guest, Tim Smeeding, has written the latest poverty report, which shows that we have 10% of the people who live in Wisconsin live in poverty. And in some areas like Milwaukee, it's up to 37%, a third of the people there live in poverty. We're going to come back with Tim and your calls at 800-642-1234 in a moment. It's The Morning Show. It's The Morning Show. I'm Carrie Kaufman. We're talking today about the poverty rate in Wisconsin in the wake of a new report that shows there are more people who fall into the poverty measurements than in previous studies. But can people above the poverty line really make it in this state? We are taking your calls, 800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org. Madonna from Viroqua. Madonna, welcome to the program.
Yes, good morning. Calling in regards to your program here. My husband and I, we were had everything in our life, but then all of a sudden a split second of life changes, and he had brain injury from his job.
Wow,
and
I'm so sorry.
Yes, and the justice system said we could live on our $1,300 a month. Yeah, and we know what poverty is. We used to have it all, but as I say, what do you do now? We make ends meet, but you never have enough for your gas or for food or whatever. It's pretty saddened how the justice system had said, you know, just live the way you are. But we lost retirement and everything through the injury. And so, what do you do on that? You know, you're sitting there and you're speaking, all of a sudden, blink of an eye, and everything changes. But, yeah, I just wanted to speak on that and just say, hey, we are not in this situation because we want to be, but here we are. And so hopefully, but we have people that have been grace and gave us grace in helping us out, too. So we are thankful for that.
Thank you, Madonna, and I'm very sorry. Tim, this brings up, though, kind of a fundamental question that we are arguing in our society. How do we take care of people? If people are able, they can work. If people are not able, how do we take care of them, or do we take care of them?
Oh, Madonna, I'm so sorry for your loss, and I hope your husband hangs in there. I know it's difficult. It's hard. I mean, we live in an economy where wages aren't high enough for one person to do it, and sometimes not for two people together. And these are just, you know, these are the rules that, you know, you get so much benefit. You know, savings and insurance are the other ways, but that can be hard when you're trying to pay for the house and put the kids to school and everything. It's just that a lot of our crucial goods are very expensive, and they can be afforded by people who are well-to-do, and the middle class is having a hard time with them because incomes aren't rising and wages aren't rising, and something like this happens and you're just in trouble. The nice thing is, my guess is, your community is helping or your church is helping, and those are wonderful organizations. But it's just really hard to prepare for the unexpected unless, you know, you've got a lot of insurance and savings. And again, those are, you know, you've got to pay the bills first. You got to put the kids through school. You know, you got to have a car that runs to get from here to there. You got to do this and that. And incomes aren't rising. We have a lot of middle class people in Wisconsin. The Pew says we have some of the biggest middle class counties and cities and areas in the country, which we do. But middle class is at, you know, $10,000 a year less now than mm-hmm. it was. Before the Great Recession, those manufacturing jobs aren't paying that much if you can find them, and it is just hard out there. I'm sorry. I don't know what to tell you, Madonna. I hope your husband gets better soon, and that if you can hang in there until you get to your retirement. my heart goes out to you, and I wish you all the best.
We are going to talk to Andrew from Minneapolis. Andrew, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Hey, thanks for having me. Excellent show. I really appreciate everything that's been said. So I am a graduate of Beloit College, graduated in 2005, spent some time in southern Wisconsin. I'm actually a high school teacher up in St. Paul. And one of the things that I've seen in my career working in like Title I schools is this issue of education and cost. And I know that your guest was mentioning earlier the, you know how like University of Wisconsin-Madison and how, you know, education is a key to success. You know, I mean, we continuously say that, but the cost is so high. And what makes me so angry, I mean, you know, and I know we're trying to stay positive here, but what makes me so mad is rising costs of tuition. And I know that just seems like we spend so much money when it comes to higher education. We spend so much money on, you know, facilities and sports teams at the expense of tuition. And I don't know if this is something that we can address here on this program, but I continuously see it, that one of the reasons that's keeping my students from college and beyond is cost. And I know Beloit College, for example, we are right now full tuition $58,000. When I graduated 13 years ago, it was $32,000. So how can we have accessible education? I guess is what my question is.
You know, Tim, I want to add to this that you referred to this earlier in the hour, that when you went to school in the 1970s, it was free or virtually free. There are a lot of people of your generation who keep saying that, and the cost of college has gone up as costs have risen, but also as state and federal dollars have declined.
This is true. Andrew, you make a great point. It's just all I can say is that tell your students to persevere and push ahead. The last thing you know about going to college is the price, the last thing. Mike McPherson, a good friend of mine who was the president of Spencer Foundation, told me this a long time ago, and it's right. If you don't have the means, many colleges and universities, which need more students who are good students, will try and help you get there. They'll try and give you some work study. They'll try and give you a package of things to get you where you want to go. You know, if you've got good students who are ready to get there, that will help. But it isn't free and it isn't cheap.
But what's the difference? What's the difference? Why was it free?
It wasn't free when I was close to free. In public schools, it was free. Well, part of it is because of people like me. We're expensive. The college of good professors, and especially the research university, are expensive. That's all there is to it. Okay, and there's lots of competition. I'm losing two of my colleagues this year to other places who've been bought by somebody else. We've been fighting this all the way. We could subsidize it more for sure. One of the big battles that you find within every state is the cost of Medicaid and the cost of prison versus the cost of higher education. And you get somebody like, I'm not sure what's going on at the university in Minneapolis, but here, you know, you're in a box. You can't raise tuition, even on people who can afford to pay more tuition, and there's a lot of them. So you have to do something else. You have to get people to donate, like the Moggridges and others who have underwritten lots of scholarships here. And you have to make promises like our chancellor made to help low-income people get in. And not only get in, get through. That's the next thing. It isn't just getting in the door.
True.
It's getting through. So I couldn't agree with you more, Andrew. But those private schools, they are expensive. One of the nicest things, the richest private schools are increasingly under pressure to use their money to help reduce costs for people who can't afford it. There's a lot of pressure. That's one of the good things, maybe the only good thing that came out of the tax bill and other things.
You know, the sticker price is not always
the point. The sticker price is not always the price.
We are talking about poverty in Wisconsin with UW Economics Professor Timothy Smeeting. Nancy from Grafton, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Hey,
our family has been the biggest family in this village here. And my husband was a union construction worker. And I'll tell you, we didn't get any help from anybody, but we had doggone good health insurance for our kids, and everybody learned how to work from the time they were little kids on. And I think it's time that our high schools start having classes, like here in Grafton. We have an automotive teacher, Carl Hader. His students have gone, they've won in the United States. They were the best students, the best automotive people. We need people that can learn how to be... It can be electricians, plumbers, carpenters, all kinds of things, even culinary arts, all those things. They should have that opportunity in high school to see if that's something that would fit them. Or unions do teach. You know, you can go to classes and learn how to be these jobs, and they pay well, and they've got good benefits. And even when you retire, they still have benefits. So anyway, I think, and also another thing is, had a discussion not too long ago about prisoners, people who are in prison. Instead of sitting there doing not a doggone thing, and they're going to get out, they're not going to be there for the rest of their life, and they're going to be, you know, good people to get back out in the society, let them learn trades over there so when they get out, they've got a skill. They can go and they can get a job, and they can pay their way, you know. It's time we start looking a different way instead of everybody has to go to college. They don't need to all go to college. We need these other trade people and people who can help us down through the years.
Tim, thank you very much, Nancy. I appreciate that. Tim, she brings up two things. First of all, prisoners do get training. They just can't always get a job after prison because of that stigma. Is that correct?
Well, that's true. Sometimes they're not trained in the right things. We train people to cut hair, for instance, or something, and then we say you can't have a pair of scissors, so you can't get the job. But in March this year, the New York Times had a front page story that showed a young white guy, healthy looking, being trained in prison to go to work at Stoughton Trailer. Okay, he walked right out into a $16 an hour job. So I wrote to the state and I asked the person who's in charge of reducing recidivism, what are the data on African-American men who are in that situation? And I've heard nothing back. I've asked twice. I've heard nothing back. You have to give somebody a chance. Yes, do they need training? Yes, they might need some training. They need apprenticeships. But if, and Nancy, is it Nancy I'm talking to?
Yes.
Nancy,
yeah.
You came off the screen, Nancy. But Nancy, you know, I grew up in the same kind of household you did. My dad was a union carpenter. It's just hard walking into those jobs now. And you need some technical schooling and technical training because you're more likely to be working with computerized instruments now than you were back then. And not everyone has to get a four-year degree. And some of the high schools are actually doing some of this and pointing you toward technical degrees and certificates that you can walk right in. But if the governor says, tells the Wall Street Journal, we have so many jobs that we're going to push people off of food share and other programs and into those jobs, give them a job. Give them a job. Tell the employer, you need somebody to do this. Here they are. Well, they need some training. Okay, you need some training. Fine. Here's $4 an hour off for six months to help this kid learn the job or her learn the job and get involved in the industry and then, you know, develop some good work habits and then stick. So that we need this. We definitely need this. We can't have employers saying we can't find workers and workers saying we can't find jobs. Well, find a way to get the two together. I agree with you.
We are talking about poverty in Wisconsin, and we are taking your calls for the next few minutes, 800-642-1234. Stacy in Oconomowoc, welcome to the program. Stacy, are you there?
Yep.
Hi. So what is your comment or question?
Well, if it costs $32,000 to house an inmate in prison, why is it acceptable for us to have to struggle with minimum wage at $15,000 a year to raise a family?
Excellent question, Stacy. Tim?
I couldn't agree more, Stace. We're still at $7.25 an hour. Turns out 8 of the 10 states that have applied for waivers to do what we want to do to the 9 laws that we passed to push people into work have minimum wages at that same level. Now, $15 an hour is going to cost you more than it's worth. But what we could do is move to $7, $8, $9, $10 an hour with no problem. And if you do this, according to the Congressional Budget Office, for every person who might get laid off because the wages are high, 19 get a raise. I'm willing to take those trade-offs. The right only talks about the people who get laid off, and the left only talks about the raises. I'm willing to do that. Now, I had some good friends of mine say, hey, wait a minute. You know, the effective minimum wage is $11-$12. You can get a job at a Quick Stop anywhere at $11-$12 an hour. And I said, well, that's great. Then what's wrong with making the minimum wage $10 if, you know, that you shouldn't have any problem with it? There are still people who are working really low, at really low wages in this state, and the low-wage people deserve some break. Now, getting rid of the non-compete clauses, allow them to move from job to job is important. That's good. And I just think that we could easily go to $9 or $10 an hour in this state in 3 years without any damage, with mainly gains. And if you ask somebody, are you willing to work, how much are you willing to work at 7.25 an hour? Well, I'm not going to drive from here to there for that. But if I tell you if it's 10, it's at least $10 an hour, oh, that may be different. Yeah, now maybe maybe this makes more sense now. And so that's part of the problem with raising the minimum wage. And we should. I have a proposal that some people have seen that I'm running by the, I'm teaching some students about it next week, to go to $9 or $10 an hour, which doesn't seem like a lot, but it's a 30% increase over what we got right now. And we should do that in this state. 29 other states have. I totally agree with you.
We are talking about the poverty rate. Our guest, Tim Smeeding, has written a report looking at the poverty rate in 2016 in Wisconsin, where it went up from 2015. Let's talk. We have not, in the next 3 minutes, if we could talk about children in poverty. I saw some numbers that showed that the children in poverty in some areas in Milwaukee are as much as like 42%. In rural areas, on reservations, what is the poverty rate in this state?
Children are a special concern of mine. The most uninsurable risk in the world is picking your own parents. You don't get to do that. Mm. And trying to give a kid a chance, trying to stabilize incomes for a family that allows them to at least, you know, put a floor, $200 a kid a month or something like that, underneath their incomes, and then be able to use that flexibly to try and make themselves better off. This is exactly what we should be doing in this country, and we're not doing it yet. I'm a member of a National Academy of Sciences committee, which is charged with finding ways to have child poverty in 10 years in our country. And we have some ideas. I can't say anything about the report yet, but maybe I can come back in the fall and talk about those. But it's a tragedy. You have to give a kid a chance at the middle class. You have to give a kid decent health care and decent education. It's stupid not to. These are things that people can't afford on their own that we should be subsidizing. These are the people who are going to pay for our Social Security in the future and are going to support us. We need to do more for kids, for sure.
Timothy Smeeding is the Lee Rainwater Distinguished Professor of Public Affairs and Economics at the UW La Follette School of Public Affairs. Tim authored the study out Friday that is called Wisconsin Poverty Report, Moving in the Wrong Direction. He's showing it to me right now. Rising poverty rates in 2016. Tim, thank you for being with us. We could have talked for another hour. We have the phone calls for that. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much, Carrie, and thanks for people who called in on Wisconsin.
The Morning Show is produced by Colleen Leahy, Brianne Shasso, Chris Molina, Laura Pavin, and Sarah Hopeful. Michael Derringer is our technical director. Keely Boltina is the executive producer. I'm Carrie Kaufman, and this is the Ideas Network.